So, I'm glad this got you talking. Is this the right sound next to my mouth? Okay. Okay, first several people asked me how can we remember dreams, so I just want to, I know Steve Eisenstadt's answer. Steve Eisenstadt is the founder and president of Pacifica, is he still? Yes, he is. Good, and so he says, eat a lot of pizza and drink beer in the evening. And just recently somebody told me, oh, I went to that place that has German sausage and drank beer, and that made me dream like crazy. So I don't know. So I can only report that's what they say. Depends on the medications you take. If you take certain medications, that might inhibit your dreaming. Also, if you dream, wake up with just a snippet of a dream, just value even that snippet of a dream. And what helps me sometimes is when I wake up and I realize I have been dreaming, to not move my head and to just repeat maybe a few words like red car, dog, tree, whatever, you know? And then I can, like, catch the tiger by its tail, you know. So, and I think having a reverent, non-judgmental attitude towards dreams, because quite often when we are used to being critical with ourselves, say, "Oh, this was a stupid dream. This was nonsense," or whatever, you know. And dreams, I would say, are like shy deer; they are in hiding. And so if you treat them with reverence and even the slightest little snippet, then they will peek their heads out and their ears and their noses. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say about that. So in the second part of my presentation, I want to present a dream of somebody I saw many, many years ago. I think it was either the first or the second Iraq war. I don't know, whenever that was. It comes up in the stream. So just as a reference. I want to show you how I can work with the personal, the mirror aspect of the dream. And then I will show a way on how to segue into the transpersonal, the window aspect of the dream, how to allow that to emerge. And I want to present Mary's dream, a woman called Mary. Her name is changed. And I worked this dream in a particular method, which is, I think, most closely related to Robbie Bosnack's embodied imagination and might have a little bit of Steve's dream trending in it. But first to first I want to bring some of the unconscious root of an image forward through what's called personal association. And personal association is if you have an image and you remember what it means to you. Let's say a red car. If I ask you for a free association, you might say sexy, red, whatever, Saint-Tropez, I don't know what would come up. But for you it might be, oh, that reminds me, red car. My mom had a car in the 50s. And that was the car she got the year her mother died. You know what I mean? So that's the personal association. And so that's usually what we do with dreams, to first kind of bring some of the unconscious roots of an image forward that pertain specifically to you. And then we enter the dream image by sensing, feeling, and then embodying the image, which is really very similar in a way to mindfulness, that it comes totally phenomenologically into the present moment. You know, I give a dream group for, gosh, is it now, six years. In my dream group, I invite people to meditate just a few minutes so they can come closer to experiencing the present moment and to listen to the dream from that place. And in that, through meditation and through tending our dreams, we can come to experience the numinous. And the present moment is basically like the gateway, the portal. And also a calm mind and heart allows insight and wisdom to emerge. So maybe we'll do just 2 minutes of coming back to meditation. And again, allow yourself to settle into the sensations you're experiencing right now in your body. Notice what is going on in your body, especially after this last discussion. What do you feel right now? Where do you feel loose? Where you feel tight? Is there a sense of tightness in your chest or in your belly, your jaw or shoulders? And again, arrive in the present moment through sensing the very natural breath. Expanding with the inhale, letting go with the exhale. Totally surrender to the movement and sensation of breath. Allowing your body to be breathed. Just being aware with an attitude of kindness, friendliness towards yourself. Noticing exactly where you are right now. As I tell the dream, you can even stay in this state you are right now, this relaxed, you might call it hypnagogic state. And please sense how you are feeling in the body. What you sense in your body is important information for you to understand Mary here in this dream. Mary is a 50-year-old woman, mother of 2 teenage daughters, who came with anxiety and some feelings of depression to see me. She had a difficult time to be confident in her feelings and to express them effectively. She told me the following dream. I am standing outside on a mountain. It is a beautiful sunny day. I see two owls in the air flying along. One is landing on my right shoulder. I love the feel of the owl sitting there. Then I see several other owls, some bigger, some still small, flying towards me. Suddenly I'm aware of several predators, big black birds. It is as if someone tells me to call the owls in so I can protect them. But it is too late. In no time, the predators have eaten the owls, also the little ones. Only a little fluff of feathers is left. I feel horrified. Only the owl that was sitting on my shoulder is left, still sitting there quietly. I ask Mary about her first feeling. She says, deep feeling of horror and sadness. Then I bring the images of the dream to life by asking Mary about her personal associations to the dream. The environment reminds her of a beautiful hilly area, not unlike the one she lives on right now. Owls are, for her, wise animals, bony, yet they have a lot of fluff around them. They have knowledge that others have not. They are awake at night and can turn their way or the head all the way around. Therefore, they see what others cannot. Mary reports that she loved owls very much. They seem gentle, quiet, observant, see a lot and know what others do not know. Having children, Mary reports that she read all the Harry Potter books in which owls play an important role as wise helpers to the students. The little owls remind her of her children, children in general, little, cute, vulnerable to life. She worries about her children in today's uncertain world. She also relates that she recently saw a report about wounded children in Iraq. The predators are birds which she can only vaguely see. They are dark, even black, big. Suddenly, they remind her of airplanes, warplanes. She begins to cry talking about this, feeling overwhelmed by the horror of war. It was the time of the second Iraq war, wars in this world. As she talks about this, I remember that previously in therapy, we worked on her fear of flying in airplanes. Mary's dream shows her and allows her to feel her personal worries, concerns, and fears. Then I guide the dreamer to embody the image. I ask Mary to tell me the dream again, slowly, thoughtfully, this time with as much detail as possible. She tells the dream again. The way to enter a dream is through direct experience. The direct experience of a physical sensation can become the entry point to the depths of the mysterious. The present moment is the crossing point between form and formless, between time and timeless, between the known and the unknowable. Just for one moment, we can be free of stories, the drama of life, past and future, in that present moment. Direct experience, meaning the felt sense of images, emotions, thoughts, and our bodies, is the way in. I asked Mary to tell me about herself in the dream, the environment, the feel of place, the time of day, the light. It is cool, yet sunny, the way she likes it, a beautiful afternoon. I let her sense into her body as she stands there, as she holds herself. She feels the owl at her cheek, softly warm. The predator's energy she senses in her throat. She starts coughing. There's something stuck, trapped, the emotion of fear. I have a feel both of these places simultaneously, stuckness, discomfort, fear in the throat, and the confidence, warmth in her cheek. The puff of feathers of the baby bird's incredible sadness she feels in her tummy. Asking Mary to hold and remember the physical sensations going along with these images allows her to call up their energy. Then I lead Mary deeper into the direct experience of the image of the owl as she experiences the owl in the end of the dream. Being in the present moment allows Mary to lean into her feelings. I ask her to describe the owl on her shoulder, his softness, color, and the feathers. I ask her in her mind to mimic the way the owl sits on her shoulder, holds itself. I ask Mary to sense into the owl, as if she were the owl. Mary said that she can now sense the owl. The owl feels very calm and strong. She senses this feeling of the owl in her center, her heart area. For a few minutes, I ask her to hold all these four places, the confidence at the cheek, the fear in her throat, the sadness in her belly, and the strong calmness in her heart. Jungian analyst Robbie Bosnak likens the process of holding several images at the same time in the container of our attention and focus to the process of alchemy, where different substances being held together in an alchemist's cauldron. Bosnak says, an embodied image is in a permanent state of being created. Through extreme slow motion, the alchemist participated in this ongoing creative process of primal matter so that he could know its hidden self and partake in its intelligence. And I might say this process allows us to allows the numinous to shine through. As Mary holds these four points together for a while, she begins to feel a shift. The horror and fear leaves for a sense of serenity, a sense of beyond good and evil, a sense of wisdom. The wise owl on the shoulder had properties of all the different levels of the image, even the deepest ones. One might think the deepest other was able to reach Mary by way of this owl. One might think the deepest other was able to reach Mary by way of this owl. To summarize, what makes this dream an example of dreams as spiritual practice is the attention given to the presence of the numinous, which shines through the miraculous emergence of new experience and meaning. in the wall dream, which I told before the break, I had to work through the sandy ground, the hard stones, the frustration of things not fitting. After a long time of hardship, there was a transformation. The mirror started to turn into a window. Through this window, we get a glimpse of a different reality beyond. Buddhist psychology would say, this is a reality that is always there, which we only have to wake up to. Ashish Dah writes, we journey into the unknown, which leads through a trackless jungle. If we are truthful to ourselves, we must admit that we do not know what it is we seek, or if there is anything to be found. Yet, the mystery comes to the very edge of the jungle and entices us with promises of joy, knowledge, and fulfillment. Well, I thought I'd leave a little bit of time to answer questions or hear comments. Also, I brought a sheet of paper, which you can take a sheet in the end, which is a simple, brief way of working with dreams for yourself. So please take one of those home. It might help you. And so I'm curious if... who has questions and comments.
Thank you very much, Radula. I'm coming half to test the system, make sure that it's working, and also to make sure we all know where the handout that you prepared is right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really a good one. I had a look at it. And my question is, at my table, someone proposed that there are actually two types of dreams, speaking grossly, you know. One of them is a kind of dream which is shallow and fretful and worried about practical things. And then there's another type of dream which is a much deeper. I didn't see this distinction in the Moore book, but I wondered what you think. Do you think, is it useful?
Jung did talk about so-called big dreams.
Yeah.
You know, which are very archetypal and life-changing. But otherwise, I might beg to disagree. I have a very democratic attitude towards dreams. And quite often people come in and they say, oh, I have this insignificant dream, or I don't even want to tell. And as we work it, it can be very significant. And often what we first think a dream is about isn't really what it is about. Or people say, oh, I have a work dream. Work dreams don't count. Actually, everything is in work, too. You know, everything is in everything and vice versa. And so, I don't think, actually not judging the dream is the first rule. Don't judge a dream by its cover.
Hi, thanks for coming, and this is really, really wonderful to think about. I wonder if you have a suggestion for a beginner's book on thinking about and looking at dreams. And then I had a question. Does the conscious mind have to access dreams for them to be able to do their work?
Say that again.
Does the conscious mind have to access dreams for them to be able to do their work? Or for what you did about the ocean?
Yeah.
It seems like there's so much going on in the ocean that it may be already very active.
Uh-huh. Very good questions. Beginner book... should have thought more about this. My one book, actually, which is quite fine as a beginner's book, is Steve Eisenstadt's Dream Tending. I think it's written very easy to understand and clear. So Steve Eisenstadt, Dream Tending, I would recommend. And then, yeah, and there are many more complicated books, but maybe that is a good first book. And, well, I don't know. I definitely think dreams, we work, our unconscious works with whether we are conscious of it or not. And so I think definitely dreams leave their mark. The inner, how did Jung call it, the 2,000 year old wise man does his work. And I think 2,000 year old wise man, he said. But I think if you bring them to consciousness, they could have more power. You know, because especially if we disqualify our dreams, you know, oh, this was just, I don't know, you know, something I saw on TV last night. And the other thing is, dreams, that's what I often hear from people, oh, this is not about anything, because that's what I saw, this person, this image was something I saw on TV. And actually that's how dreams work. I think dreams are scavengers. They borrow images, you know, from everywhere. From what you read, what you see, who's in the bus with you, you know. So there seems to be like a key lock thing, you know. Somehow it's useful, this image, wherever one encountered it, is useful to express something. And one thing many dream workers say, who work a lot with dreams, is to say, well, dreams seem to be smarter than the dreamer and the dream worker. But I say that often quite humble as a, you know, I'm in my private psychotherapy practice. It's like, wow, I'm glad the dream said it. I couldn't have said it that well. And so I find dreams being an amazing help, and also people often can hear it better. You know, it's from their own psyche. It's not something I told them. You know, it's like, whoa, I wouldn't have had the guts to say that to this person. And so it's kind of interesting, you know. So I think starting with a dream journal is a good idea. Or now sometimes I put my iPhone beside my pillow and dictate it on voice memo. You know, so because sometimes getting up in the middle of the night and is kind of a nuisance. So I know some people take their old phones and put them there. They can still be good as recorders, you know. More questions? Well, again, you know, there are many books, The Symbols of Dreams. And I have to say, I personally often get annoyed with these books because it's like dream, tree means such and such, car means such and such. And you know, I actually, and I think I agree there with Robbie Bosnack and Steve Eisenstadt and James Hillman, that it's more important what it means to you. And so I would say the same with color. You know, yes, if something is quite monochromatic, doesn't have any color, but I might just kind of find out what monochromatic is for you. I'd say for most people it would be, more flat. But who knows, if you're an artist who loves only monochromatic photos, it might be amazing, you know. So I think you have to always bring it in context with that. But I think sometimes dreams ask for attention. And so sometimes when people say, oh, I just had the most vivid colors ever, just as I have the same dream over and over again, that is the dream or whatever it is, wants attention. You know what? I really want you to get this. You still didn't get this. I give this to you one more time. So, yeah. Please, Michael.
Wondered if you said luminous or numinous, and what is your take on both of those words?
I think I said numinous, which is, I guess, numen, the cloud. Maybe I would see it like with this middle-aged mystic behind the cloud of unknowing. You know, so I think that's where numinous comes from. And it's a way, especially depth psychologists, Jungians, talk about the sacred. I hope I get this right. And so I think we all are a little bit lost at word. Do we call it God? Do we call it sacred? Do we call it the divine? Do we call it the numinous? You know, do we call it the other, but it's also within us? So I think language just isn't good enough. So I think that's what numinous is. Luminous is, luminous comes from lumen, light. So there is this image of the light shining through from beyond or within, you know. So I would definitely say dreams have a numinous and a luminous nature, but I think I said numinous. Oh yeah, and actually I do have to go in a few minutes. So it's last question.
Mm-hmm. It's not a question. I just want to say how much I enjoyed this chapter and what he said about dreams, long dreams being a kind of personal Bible, which really was wonderful for me to hear. A personal Bible, yeah. So that's all.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh yeah, and would you give out the...
Yes, we have a handout, and we have two Word in Lifers, one at each doorway there. So when you go out, be sure to get it, because it's a wonderful handout. And I wanted to tell you about this. Christine brought this. This is those of you who are in touch with the Unity Church. This is from last year, August of 2015. The Unity magazine features Thomas More, if you have access to that. Okay? All right. Thank you very much, Radley. We love you. You come back.